It's Friday, October 6th, 2006. For PodTech News, this is Clark Boyd in Boston. On today's podcast, Harvard Law School goes virtual with a class called Cyber One, Law in the Court of Public Opinion. If you've ever wanted to attend Harvard Law but never had the LSAT scores to get in, this course is for you. Anyone, yes, anyone, is invited to experience parts of the class through the 3D virtual world called Second Life. How realistic is it? Well, the professors have built an entire island in Second Life where people will meet, greet, and argue.
We've been able to replicate a building and a classroom at Harvard University in order to facilitate our classroom experience. It really looks like a physical world. You move around in it like you move in a physical world, except that you can fly, which is very nice. And you interact with other people in much the same way that you would interact in the real world.
Cyber persuasion and new directions in distance learning on this PodTech podcast. Cyber One, Law in the Court of Public Opinion, is the brainchild of Charlie Nesson. He's a Harvard Law School professor and the co-founder of the law school's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Nesson gave a talk about Cyber One recently, and he discussed how the course fit in with the Berkman Center's vision.
It's a core element of the Berkman Center to focus on openness. I would say one of the primary motivations of the Berkman Center was to introduce and extend and amplify, to the extent we could, the sensibility of openness. It's a sensibility that connects directly with the open access argument of the class.
That openness is something a bit new at Harvard. True, the real-world part of Cyber One is still only open to Harvard Law School students, but through CCTV and Second Life, Harvard Extension School students and the public at large can participate in parts of the course as well. In his talk, Nesson admitted that such openness doesn't play well in all academic circles.
We're not suggesting that all of Harvard necessarily go this way. If we were to do that, I'm sure that it would feel threatening in the nth degree to many, many faculty members. It's also in some way threatening to a university to think that its word will be spread everywhere. Traditionally, the core of a university has been its library. The scholars come here. We give credit. We charge huge amounts of money for tuition. And so somehow the idea that the product would be offered raises the threat of devaluing the product that we're actually charging significant money for and living on as a business plan. So that's a large part of what we're worried about.
Still, Nesson thinks these challenges can be met and that this kind of instruction is the wave of the future. Nesson's embraced online media as teaching tools. He even created this short web video to explain the thinking behind Cyber One.
I'm teaching a class with my daughter Rebecca this fall. It's a class about argument, but not argument in a courtroom, which is what I usually teach, but argument in the new integrated media space that I call cyberspace. Students will engage this class and make their arguments in a variety of cyber media, through blog, through wiki, through podcast, through webcast, through community television.
Halfway through the video, Charlie Nesson transforms into his Second Life character, or avatar.
Come with me into the virtual classroom where I will introduce you to my daughter Rebecca's avatar. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello. Welcome to Second Life.
I managed to catch up with Rebecca Nesson recently for an interview. I started by asking her, why teach a course in the virtual world of Second Life?
Second Life provides an opportunity for a whole new level of distance education from what people have experienced before. And the way that it has previously worked, which is pretty much state of the art, is for students to go to a website, click on a video that they watch, and then correspond by email or chat. But they have very limited opportunity for interaction with the instructors directly or with fellow students. Second Life is a whole world, so they actually have a classroom. They come, they can do group work with each other. They can actually have as close to a physical experience of a classroom community as they might have otherwise.
Talk a little bit about Second Life itself, for maybe for listeners who don't know as much about Second Life. Talk a little bit about what Second Life is like, your experience of it, and why that particular program seems suited to teaching a class like this.
Well, Second Life is quite amazing to me. I'm pretty new to it myself. What it is a 3D virtual world, which I've been describing to people pretty much as like a video game without any particular purpose to it when you arrive in it. So rather than trying to rescue the princess or reach some other goal, it's entirely up to you what your goals are when you get there. And on top of that, you are given the facility to build whatever objects or create objects in the world. So the environment in Second Life is entirely created by the people who inhabit it, the Second Life residents. And this has resulted in a huge variety of things being created in Second Life, from commercial areas with all kinds of different stores, to social spaces like dance clubs, to educational spaces like Berkman Island, where we've been able to replicate a building and a classroom at Harvard University in order to facilitate our classroom experience.
Talk a little bit more about the title of the course, Cyber One, Law in the Court of Public Opinion. Give listeners a sense of what sorts of things are going to come out in this class, what sort of areas that you're going to explore.
Well, I would say that the core idea of the class is actually expressed best in Yochai Benkler's new book, The Wealth of Networks. And it's about the way that our economy is shifting from one that's been based on an industrial market economy where large companies with a lot of capital produce the big information goods that are the base of our economy, to one that is now what he calls the networked information economy, in which the network is everywhere and production of information goods is cheap. And we're seeing an amazing emergence of non-market-based, non-proprietary information goods being produced and made available. And Second Life itself is a great example of this, that there are now 700,000 people participating in Second Life, building this whole society without Linden Labs, the company that runs Second Life, having built any of it. They've just provided the platform and the people in the world have built it. It's just an amazing, loosely collaborative volunteer production. And so we're studying that in the class, and we're studying that from a lawyer's perspective in terms of what it takes to persuade people to get on board with the project that is important to you to do.
So it can feed back into the legal education as well of these folks.
Yes. For the law students, I think when they go out into the world to be lawyers in the future, this is going to be one of the skills that's really going to be necessary for people who are advocates. They're going to have to understand how to go out into the networked information economy and make their voices heard and the voices of their clients. And it's not the type of thing that can easily be bought with money. It's something that really has to be persuasive to other people. The way that we've been thinking about it is that it's a type of argument that takes place across the base of the social or power pyramid. It's something where you're trying to convince other people like you rather than convincing somebody at the top and having the effects of that trickle all the way down to the people who are at the bottom of that power pyramid. And certainly for the extension school students or anybody else who participates, it's an extremely useful skill. It almost doesn't matter what your interest is. It's a question of becoming a participant in creating the environment that we want to live in the future.
Just as the course was starting this semester, Linden Labs admitted that a hacker broke into a database containing hundreds of thousands of Second Life user accounts. I ended my interview with Rebecca Nessen by asking her whether this caused her and her father concern. She said not at all. In fact, she said that they intend to use the incident as a teaching tool.
It's great because it really focuses this question of what the responsibilities of the government of the virtual world are and how law takes shape. It's in a certain sense like a terrorist attack in this world. There's a question of how the government of the world should handle it. There are a lot of other similar issues that have arisen having to do with free speech and the existence of pornography in these worlds and how that should be dealt with, and other simpler things like changing of the pricing schemes. And it's been very interesting to see how residents of the virtual worlds make their voices known by doing political protests. Benkler points out in his book that when Second Life wanted to change the pricing scheme, a large group of residents of Second Life picketed the place where new avatars begin, where they get set down, so that when you first arrived at Second Life, you came across a large number of people picketing the entrance area. And this was a fairly effective form of political protest. To me, that's very interesting to see that the types of political protests that are happening are not so dissimilar to what we use in the real world.
Rebecca, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And that will wrap things up for this PodTech podcast. In Boston, this is Clark Boyd reminding you to check out podtech.net for all the latest technology news.